of the Capital Investment Committee for February 9th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lanchesky, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fooley.
Lee, present.
Representative Fooley, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Present. Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
Abaje, present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Berg, present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Franke.
Franke, present.
Representative Keith Franke, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Rick Hansen, present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt.
Hewitt, present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
Good morning.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh, present and happy to be here.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
Present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang.
Present.
Representative Jay Zhang, present. Members, with the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Members, a quorum is present. Representative Murphy, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 4th?
I move that we approve the minutes for February 4th, our 8th meeting.
Representative Murphy moves approval of the minutes for February 4th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 4th are approved. Members, today's hearing is focused on two different types of bond authorized by the state to address the housing crisis. Housing infrastructure bonds, which are appropriation bonds and general obligation bonds. Members and staff of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee, chaired by Rep. Hausman, and the Preventing Homelessness Division, chaired by Rep. Gomez, were invited to participate in this hearing. I'm pleased to see that so many of you all are able to join us. Chair Hausman and Gomez, I'd like to invite both of you to make a quick comment and remark. Chair Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing else in life goes well if you don't have a safe place to sleep at night. And so we're motivated to be here today because even though housing was already a crisis, it has become even greater since the pandemic and jobs that were lost and people who are one paycheck away from not being able to pay their bills. So the two tools that you're talking about today, I'd like to call attention to one so that as you listen to testimony and as you read the attachments, you will become aware of the great need in public housing and HRAs all over the state. In 2014, we did $20 million for public housing, GO bonds. In 2020, even though Homes for All asked for $100 million, we did $16 million. We went backwards from 2014 to 2020, from $20 million to $16 million. In the largest bonding bill ever, we went backwards in public housing. So you'll hear today about the huge unmet need there. And then housing infrastructure bonds, also the need is great. The complaint I heard over and over this year was nonprofits who said we had a good project, it met all the criteria, but we didn't get funding because there wasn't enough money for all of the applications. It's a valuable tool that allows us to partner with nonprofits, and they leverage a lot of private money. Because it's a valuable tool, I'm very protective of appropriation bonds, as you will know on another bill that's going to come before your committee. So thank you for having us, and look forward to the testimony this morning.
Thank you, Chair Houseman. Chair Gomez?
Thank you so much, Chair Lee. And Chair Houseman covered a lot of the ground of why this discussion is so important today. I'm really thankful to you for bringing us together to discuss these tools, because, you know, as much as, you know, we're experiencing a housing crisis in every community in Minnesota, a housing supply crisis and a housing affordability crisis, you know, in terms of direct appropriations, the funding for housing really constitutes a tiny fraction of a percentage of our budget. And as Chair Houseman said, that doesn't really reflect the centrality of, you know, having housing and being able to build the good life that we all want to ensure for all the residents of Minnesota. You know, obviously we have a housing affordability crisis, and we also have a homelessness crisis, which is why the speaker decided that it was important to have a division that directly considered preventing homelessness this biennium for the first time in a long time, which is my understanding. So many of the people who experience homelessness, the thousands of people who experience homelessness across our state each year, fall into homelessness because of simple economic precarity. As Representative Houseman talked about, you know, more than half of people in this country don't have the wherewithal in their budget to withstand an unanticipated $400 expense. So what that means is that more and more people, especially in COVID, especially as, you know, the impacts on BIPOC communities and the working class are particularly pronounced under COVID, more and more people are falling off and falling into being either homeless or precariously housed where they don't have that kind of guarantee of housing and that solid base to build the lives that they need for them and their families. And so, you know, housing is a spectrum. And so we're on a spectrum from emergency shelter to really meet folks who are experiencing homelessness where they are, through, you know, sort of different levels of affordability and rentals, public housing and homeownership. And we need to think of the entire continuum of housing when we talk about any of these issues, because a constraint in supply at any point along that continuum has impacts on other places. And so part of the issue with the affordability is really about supply. So, you know, housing infrastructure bonds are incredibly important to ensure that the state's doing their part to really invest in the infrastructure, which, you know, expands supply and can help to keep prices affordable for families, as wages over the last 40 years have stagnated with respect to every kind of cost of living, but particularly housing. You know, there's nowhere in the state of Minnesota, or indeed in the country, where a minimum wage worker can afford the median priced apartment and not be considered cost burdened, you know, spending more than 30% of their income on housing. So I'll just stop there. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And again, I'm very grateful to Chair Lee for bringing us together and for including the members of our division in this important conversation. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Chair Houseman, for the words. And again, thank you to our members on the two housing committees for joining us this morning. Before we turn it over to Commissioner Ho, I do want to direct members' attention to the agenda that if we follow the agenda, we will have 20 minutes at the end of all the presentations for members' Q&A. And so with that, Commissioner Ho, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Lee, Chair Houseman, Chair Gomez. This is the first time I've ever testified in front of three committees at once, so forgive any failure in protocol that I do this morning. And I am trying to block the sunlight from lighting me up this way, but I can't quite figure out how to just get the curtain the last inch. So I have a bright stripe on my head. So apologies for that. There's a great group of people that are following me today, and I'm very excited that you're going to hear from people who actually put the bonding resources that the agency has because of you to work for people, because I think that they will be able to personify really the good that these resources do. I'm going to talk first about our housing infrastructure bonds and then talk about our general obligation public housing preservation program. Ryan Baumtag, my assistant commissioner for policy, is here and running the magic screen. Ryan, slide two, please. The governor's budget proposal includes $100 million of housing infrastructure bonds. Just this last October, the legislature in your October bonding bill authorized us with $100 million in housing infrastructure bonds. I am excited to have these in play again this year. I'll just say that for the development community, the people that put these proceeds to work, knowing that it's going to be available from year to year is really important in terms of the planning that we need to do in order to solve the housing shortage that you all spoke about so eloquently earlier. And what these housing infrastructure bonds allow us to do is really provide deep affordability for Minnesotans who make the least. They allow us to do what I call going big so that everybody can go home. Next slide, please. So, you know, the housing infrastructure bonds are a Minnesota innovation. These do not exist everywhere around the country. Minnesota created them in 2012, largely because the vast majority of housing in Minnesota is not publicly owned. So the trying to figure out in the past how to use the general obligation bonds in order to create housing that was being done by a nonprofit, for example, was just a contortion to try to figure out how to make the resources available work with the bonding authority. So since it was created in 2012, it's become the largest state source of capital for doing housing development. And again, you know, kind of an envy around the country. We have a number of states that have inquired into the way that we structured these appropriation bonds and are looking to put them into place as well. It also leverages just an enormous amount of other sources of funds. Next slide, Ryan. So since 2012, there's been more than $400 million in housing infrastructure bonds that have been authorized. And that has resulted in over $775 million in total development costs. And I point that out because that's jobs. That's economic development. That's getting people to work. And it's also creating or preserving over 4,700 units. Again, it's really critical for deep affordability for folks that make the least. And it's been a great source for us to do more permanent supportive housing, as well as senior housing that's deeply affordable. So on slide six, these are the uses. So we have a huge supply of federally assisted rental housing that is not a part of the public housing portfolio. It's owned and operated by private developers, and it has a federal Section 8, project-based Section 8 assistance in it. But that housing is aging and needs preservation. Again, it's targeted for supportive housing, for families and individuals who have long histories of homelessness or are at high risk of homelessness, and a special part for people with behavioral health needs. I smile or cringe depending on the day when I talk about seniors age 55 or older. I guess I'm now officially a senior. That was a new use in 2018, but I've visited some of the senior housing that's been done with this. In 2019, we did our announcement down at Sabathany, where Sabathany was going to do senior housing, serving that community. I also knew in 2018 using this for manufactured home community infrastructure. If you go through manufactured home communities, you'll oftentimes notice that the roads are disintegrating. There's utility issues. When the roads are disintegrating, the school buses won't go in, the garbage trucks won't go in, which creates just health and safety issues for the families that live there. And then also new just in October is around the development of single family homes. We have been using housing infrastructure bonds for community land trusts, but we now have an expanded use for single family homes in 2020. This is detailed authorization from 2012 through 2020. You'll see that the October bonding bill at $100 million was the largest yet. And yet I'll say that in housing, none of our programs are sized to meet need. So there's always room for growth. You'll also notice that we've done both multifamily and single family projects with the housing infrastructure bonds over time. You'll see the leverage. You may wonder why is it that some years we're able to do more units than others. Every year, the basket of projects that are selected is a mix of preservation and new construction. Preservation tends to have a lower cost per unit, but new construction adds to supply in ways that are really critical. So you'll see that it varies pretty significantly from year to year. You might ask why in some years did we not select as much as been authorized? It's because when there's new uses, we need time for the development community to understand that there will be a preference for projects of certain types. And so then we catch up in future years. One thing that I am just particularly proud of is that even though the bonding bill didn't come this year until late in October, that we were already in our selections process and we were able to match the new bonding authority for housing infrastructure bonds to projects that were already in our RFP process. So next slide, Ryan. So let me just talk through a little bit about the projects that we moved forward in 2020, just so you can understand a little bit about how we put these dollars to use. So developers apply for deferred 0% interest loans through our annual consolidated RFP process. It's a consolidated RFP because we have lots of agency resources and then some partner resources that are all available through a single application. And housing infrastructure bonds are one of the sources that are there. What we do is we take a look at each project and figure out what the statutory uses of different funds and programs are. And then we score projects. And then we match the higher scoring projects with the resources that are available. It's particularly interesting, having now been a part of this process for the last 2 years with the agency, is that we're doing this for both new construction and preservation and multifamily and single family all in a pot. So it's an enormous spreadsheet where you're trying to figure out what are all the different types of money that can be used, what are all the different projects, and how can we maximize the number of units that we impact, the number of families that we impact in a year. So obviously, because these are large loans, there's a lot of underwriting and due diligence that goes along both before we select a project and before we close the loan. And then we do the housing infrastructure bond sale every year, just following Minnesota Management and Budget's annual sale, because these are state appropriation bonds and they're tied to the state's financial records that are tied to the state issuance of general obligation bonds every year. And then the state of Minnesota pays the debt service on these bonds. So for 2020, next slide, Ryan. I always feel like I'm speaking to just the mysterious entity out there. Thanks, Ryan. For the single family and the manufactured home park side of things, it was a new use in October. We had already opened our annual consolidated RFP in April, and it had closed in July. So developers did not yet know that this new single family use was going to be put on there. And we made the selections in December. But still, we used $2.9 million of the housing infrastructure bond proceeds to do 9 community land trust proposals that are creating 50 home ownership opportunities for Minnesotans. And then we did set aside just a small amount of the available authorization so that we could really tee up the single family new use in 2021. We also did our first ever manufactured home community infrastructure project with $600,000 of housing infrastructure bond proceeds. And we did that in conjunction with a parallel manufactured home park infrastructure RFP that we did with the appropriations specific to that line item. So it's the first time ever that we used the housing infrastructure bonds in a manufactured home community infrastructure project. Just to show you the numbers, we do get in more requests than we're able to fund. We've referred to this in the past as a competition, but I like to think of it more as a competition the way that a marathon or an Ironman is a competition. You want everybody to get over the finish line. You know, it's just that our ability to make awards is really dependent on the amount of resources that we have available in any given year. When we don't have a large amount of housing infrastructure bonds available to us, we tend to have to say no to 3 out of every 4 proposals that come our way. But with 100 million of housing infrastructure bonds, I only had to say no to 2 out of 3 proposals that come our way. Of course, it would be great to say yes to more of these developers and more of these projects in order to be able to create a lot more housing in Minnesota. So of note, we do get proposals from Greater Minnesota as well as the metro area. We try to use CARE in selections to make sure that these projects are being funded throughout the state. And you'll see in this last year's announcements, we came out 50-50 in terms of projects in Greater Minnesota and projects in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Back when I could travel freely, there was no part of the state that I went to that didn't need the type of housing that housing infrastructure bonds can both preserve and create. So in last year's selections, we had 335 new units and 6 senior housing projects, including some preferencing of units within those projects for homeless seniors. It is jarring that we are even talking about homeless seniors, and it's the fastest growing demographic group in people experiencing homelessness. Tied perhaps to the aging of the baby boom and the cohort of people experiencing chronic homelessness who have continued to age along the way. We did 5 permanent supportive housing projects, including 154 new units and 76 rehab units. It made me smile to realize that we've been doing supportive housing in the state long enough that we're actually due for some reinvestment in supportive housing projects. But it's, you know, what's important to preserve the quality, livability, and health and safety of these units over time. And then we had 3 projects that were federally assisted preservation projects totaling 127 units. One of the things I've asked my team to pay special attention to is when we bring these scarce state and federal resources into projects, are we using those investments to make sure that we're creating units that are affordable to people who make the least? And so one of the things that we're tracking is where is it that that what we do kind of creates a unit that's rent restricted for folks who are 30% of area median income or below without rental assistance, and where are we leveraging rental assistance in order to bring the cost of that unit down so that it's affordable to people at 30% of area median income. So this just shows you how we're able to do that with housing infrastructure bonds, both by buying down the cost of the unit just with the housing infrastructure bonds itself, or by leveraging rental assistance like the Department of Human Services housing support, maybe a project-based HUD VASH or a federal Section 811 supportive housing for people with disabilities assistance. I wanted to take a moment just to talk about the public housing infrastructure. Obviously, public housing is a critical part of the state's assisted housing network. A lot of it was built in the 60s and the 70s, and the federal government in many ways has not kept up with the upkeep of the deferred maintenance associated with public housing. And so the state, since 2012, has invested through general obligation bonds over $45 million that's allowed us to help preserve 96 projects, improving 6,850 units. Public housing exists all over the state. You know, these projects do things like sprinklers, elevators, heaters, boilers, windows, sidewalks, things that just deal with basic health and safety as well as accessibility and energy efficiency improvements. If you take a look at who lives in public housing, it's largely seniors, people with disabilities. About a third of our public housing units are for families with children. And Chair Hussman talked about the public housing preservation, general obligation bonds, $16 million that was in the October bonding bill. That is now out. The request for proposals is out there. And we're going to do an informational webinar on March 1st. Proposals are due on April 29th. So just wanted to make sure folks know that we've got that $16 million in play already for folks. That's the extent of the prepared remarks that I have today. I just think that it's important to understand that the housing infrastructure bonds, the public housing preservation bonds, they're a part of a whole package of financing tools that Minnesota Housing has, both access to the federal low-income housing tax credits, our bonding authority generally, the HUD programs that we move through the agency, HOME, the National Housing Trust Fund, and then the other state appropriated programs where the governor is requesting $14 million of one-time increases. I understand, Chair Lee, that you want to take questions at the very end. So I'm happy to pause and take some now if you want, but also happy just to pop back up later after our great partners have had an opportunity to present.
Thank you, Commissioner Ho. So we'll be having questions at the end from our members. Next up, we have Lee Blance, the CEO and president of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Mr. Blance or Ms. Blance, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. I'm Lee Blance, and I'm the CEO and president of Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Chair Lee and members, I'm pleased to speak today in favor of the $100 million Housing Infrastructure Bonding Bill. This bill is supported by the Homes for All Coalition, which represents over 270 organizations across the state with a united cause, increasing access and resources to housing in Minnesota. Let me begin by thanking all of you for your past support. In a time of political divide, it has been heartwarming to see the bipartisan support for investing in homes through the bonding bill. Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative is a collaborative of 100 faith communities in the Twin Cities who work together to create homes for those that are most disadvantaged, both directly as a developer and also as an advocate for increased public investment in housing. Beacon is one of many nonprofit and for-profit housing developers that have been able to utilize HIB to create homes to meet a variety of needs in communities across the state. With HIB, Beacon has created more homes for homeless youth, for homeless adults, and in the near future, for homeless families. Many of you are aware of the encampments that have developed in our community where men and women are huddled in tents around fires during the winter. 3 years ago, Beacon invited a number of our clergy to meet with Native leaders who walked with us to the Wall of Forgotten Natives. It was early in the morning, and people were just waking up and huddling around fires. I saw that the city of Minneapolis had hooked up a drinking fountain spout to a fire hydrant, and it was labeled potable water. It looked like a refugee camp. Seeing the ministers, one of the residents who lived in the camp came up to the minister and said, looking around at this desolate surroundings, where is God? And to me and my faith, God was in the residents who I saw sharing food and coffee with each other. It was in the broader community that showed up with clothing and other help. And in you, the state legislature, that provided housing infrastructure bonds to respond to this need. Out of that day, we made a decision to create homes in relationship with Red Lake Nation to specifically address the underserved Native community. And thanks to HIB funding, this spring we will begin rehab on a downtown building in Minneapolis to create Bimo Seda, which is Ojibwe for Let's Walk Together, named by the elders of Red Lake Nation. As supportive housing, Bimo Seda will not only be a safe home, but also have on-site mental health and chemical dependency services within intentional and culturally specific community building. Beacon has recently taken on the challenge of creating supportive housing for families that often experience generational housing instability. Funded in this very last round of HIB funding at Vista 44 in Hopkins in suburban Hennepin County, families will have not only a home, but intensive services on site to help a mom that's coming out of drug treatment reunite with her children, to help a dad find a better paying job, and to help children succeed in school that have been disrupted by homelessness and other trauma. Unfortunately, the need remains. As Commissioner Ho said, there were many developments not funded. We had two more family supportive housing developments that we are waiting for funding for. And I'd like to highlight Prairie Point, which would be the first significant supportive housing development in Scott County, because homelessness impacts all of our counties. And lastly, our youth housing. Beacon's been able to develop three youth housing developments, two of them with HIB funding. I'm going to share with you a video of Naomi, who became an advocate to help create 66 West to serve young people who experienced homelessness in the suburbs. Thanks to her and thanks to you, 66 West was created across the street from Southdale Mall in Edina to meet that need. Jenny, can you show the video?
I actually kept a list of everywhere that we stayed. We moved to 39 places in 14 months. I was 19. I just started community college. Me, my brother and sister, and my mom, we were living in Edina. Most of the time we were pretty tight, and every here and there we'd have arguments or little altercations. And so when our lease was up, my mom decided that we should actually live away from one another. Me and my brother and sister wanted to live together, and she wanted to stay by herself. We applied to this one house, and it fell through because the landlord, they turned out to be scammers. So we moved to a hotel for some time. We thought we would only be there for about a day or two because we thought we would hear back from our landlord. My brother, he was still going to Edina High School. He was a junior. He had to come first because he needed to graduate. That was a priority. He'd actually gotten to the bridge a couple of years before that, and so we knew that that was a place for him to live at. Then it was just me and my sister. Me and her moved around between hotels, friends' houses, buses, shelters, just wherever we could lay our head at night. But resources are just hard to come by. Like, a lot of shelters I thought were, you can just head there and that's it. A lot of them are, there's a wait list, you have to pay every night. The ones that are right there on the spot are the most dangerous ones. I didn't associate myself as a homeless person. I associated myself as a worker. I worked every day, 40 hours a week. I am currently living at Nicholas Square, and Nicholas Square is apartment buildings for youth. When I first found out that I had a home, it was kind of like excited but scared at the same time. That first night was calming but surreal. I didn't want to accept it for what it was at first. A lot of people assume that if you're in the suburbs, you're just automatically rich and you don't struggle. Where before I even graduated from high school, I already knew about a handful of people that were homeless. And homelessness doesn't have a look. It's easy to become homeless. I want to get back to school next semester. This was my sweatshirt I had the whole time we were homeless. Yeah, this sweatshirt just brought back a lot of hurt. Because I feel like nobody should have to go through that. Because when you're a teen, the whole time you tell yourself, I'm grown. And then when I got thrown into it, it's the scariest thing in life.
Ms. Blondes, thank you for your testimony, and thank you for sharing that story of Naomi. I believe that, you know, that has touched all the members of the committees, and really appreciate the video. Next up, we have Mr. Chad Adams, the CEO of the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, chair members and members of the committee. My name is Chad Adams, and I'm the CEO of the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership, with offices in Slayton and Mankato, Minnesota. I've been the CEO for Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership for nearly 2 years, and I previously served in local government management as a city administrator and manager for 20 years prior to this position, most recently as a city manager of Albert Lea, where I helped advance a number of housing initiatives throughout Southeast Minnesota and in Albert Lea. Our partnership promotes and delivers a high-quality, comprehensive venue of housing services as a nonprofit community development corporation. And our goal is to support preservation, stability, and economic development across 30 counties in Southwest and South Central Minnesota. This past fall, I was also elected as a co-chair of the Homes for All Coalition. Our partnership has been partnering with communities to build and develop housing for nearly 30 years. We'll soon have ownership of over 60 properties with over 2,000 primarily affordable unit housing units in Greater Minnesota. We are in regular contact with several dozens of communities across the region at any given time to first listen, then to find solutions or partnerships to meet their housing and community development needs. We hear too frequently the extraordinary need for more workforce and affordable housing in Greater Minnesota. While there are several challenges to meet these community needs, there are also too few tools and resources to meet the demands, as mentioned by Commissioner Hull previously through housing infrastructure bonds. Those bonds have served as a critical funding source to build and preserve housing in Greater Minnesota. And because of time it takes to partner and develop a product with the community to build affordable housing, which is oftentimes a three-year process from beginning of the planning process to project closing, it's equally important to have long-term commitment to housing infrastructure bonds to ensure that we can plan ahead and secure funding for much-needed affordable housing. Minnesota has been suffering from an affordable housing shortage for many years, due in part to decades of disinvestment at the federal level, stagnant wages, and inconsistent state funding. The COVID-19 pandemic has only exacerbated house instability for thousands of Minnesota households. The solutions are complex, but a safe, affordable, and accessible home is a necessary foundation if we want to have better education outcomes for our children, health care that is meaningful, long-term benefits, and economic stability for our communities. The Statewide Home for All Coalition continues to advocate for housing investment through bonding, both general obligation bonds for public housing and housing infrastructure bonds. And while we are so thankful for the passage of the bonding bill this past fall, consistent investments are key, and we remain committed in 2021 to seeking bonding funds for affordable housing. Additionally, we are seeking a new eligible use to support deeply affordable housing without wraparound supportive services. There is currently no funding source able to serve 30% of AMI households with supportive services, yet the need is so great. This past year, our partnership acquired, rehabilitated, and will preserve 56 units of affordable housing in the Hanson Apartments in Wilmer, Minnesota, by securing housing infrastructure bonds through the state of Minnesota. Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership also initially applied for both tax credits and housing infrastructure bonds as part of that project. But because of the great need for affordable and workforce housing in greater Minnesota, it's likely that the Hanson apartment projects may have not have been funded with only just tax credits. There simply is not enough funding and equity available to meet the housing needs in greater Minnesota, which is, again, has made housing infrastructure bonds so essential to the work we do. Furthermore, in Alexandria, Minnesota, we were just recently awarded some housing infrastructure bonds to acquire, rehab, preserve, Royal Manor apartments consisting of 24 affordable housing units. And while we applied again for both tax credits or housing infrastructure bonds, we were awarded the bonds due to the high competitiveness for the funding, including tax credits, and will now allow for our project to close later this year. Lastly, the partnership has been in the process of closing a large portfolio of rural development properties this year, which includes acquiring 10 properties in 7 communities in greater Minnesota, consisting of 243 units secured through tax credits and housing infrastructure bonds. The bonds, again, have been absolutely essential to acquiring and preserving the affordability of the apartment units in the portfolio, and we are grateful for the project to be funded via the portfolio. Again, without housing infrastructure bonds, most, if not all, of these properties I just mentioned may have been sold and transformed into market rate housing or may have deteriorated into substandard condition, which then becomes a challenge for those local communities. We need housing infrastructure bonds to construct and preserve affordable housing in greater Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Homes for All and the Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership. I look forward to working with you all this session, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have for Sandy Hayes, who's going to speak now, who's one of our partnership's residents at Solace Apartments in St. Peter.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Ms. Hayes, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Hi there, everybody. My name is Sandy Hayes. I'm a resident of Solace Apartments in St. Peter, Minnesota. I moved here in November of 2019. I've had a lifelong battle with alcoholism. When I moved here, I moved out of a toxic environment with an ex-husband. I had just gotten out of treatment, and I could not stay living where I was living, so I moved into a homeless shelter. When I moved out of that homeless shelter, I was lucky enough to get to move into Solace, where I got my own apartment. Since I've lived here, I've had a couple of relapses, and I went back to treatment, and I was lucky enough that being that I lived at Solace, they held my apartment for me, which is a wonderful aspect of living here. If they wouldn't have been able to hold my apartment, I would have been homeless again. So I was able to come back to Solace and have that support. One of the things that's wonderful about Solace is that they have someone named Ashley that's a resident service manager here, and she does wonderful things for the residents here. Things like having community like drives where she has gifts that she has for people that don't have access to Christmas presents for their children. So the residents here get to go and shop for Christmas presents if they don't have money for gifts for their children. Another thing for me that's been very successful is that we have on-site AA meetings. So I've gotten to go to AA while I've lived here, and that's been very successful. I've found a sponsor while I've lived here. I've also conquered a major battle of learning to live alone and love myself and be out of toxic relationships. I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't lived here alone. I've been in many relationships. They've all been toxic. And the fact that I've been here, I've been able to get mental health services. And I'm in a long-term treatment program. And I'm alone now. I love myself, and I am not in a toxic relationship anymore. If I didn't have housing like Solace, that wouldn't happen for me. The other thing is I've started working with Life Work Planning in Mankato, so I'm taking classes for career development so I can get back into the workforce. That's another thing I wouldn't have been able to do if I was homeless. I've gotten my driver's license back so that I can get back into the workforce. There's just so many things. I'm part of a community here. There are several people that live here that are all sober, and we get together and do things when it's warm out. We used to do more things when there wasn't COVID, obviously, but now we get together with Zoom meetings and have Zoom AA meetings basically on site, but not together, but we're still together. And those are things that we wouldn't be able to do if we didn't have this shelter. A lot of it's GRH funded, some of it's not, but if we work, we still also get a discounted rate for living here. We have 24-hour people on site so that we're safe while we live here. There's, you know, people can't just come into the building without being checked in. So that's a real plus. And we have just a lot of, you know, with having Ashley here, she gives us a lot of access to different services we might need, like mental health services, ways to get rides, ways to get food if we need food through like the food bank. All I can say is that if I didn't live here, my life wouldn't be going as well as it is now. I've got a lot more sobriety than I did when I lived, when I wasn't living here. And I've learned to love myself, live alone, and I'm moving forward in my life in a positive way now. So I wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't for Solace. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes, and thank you to the other testifiers for presenting on the impact of housing infrastructure bonds. Next up, we'll move on to public housing, our public housing operators to talk about the need for public housing rehabilitation. First up, we have Diane Larson, the Executive Director of Itasca County and Grand Rapids HRA. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Lee, Chair Gomez, and Chair Hausman, and members of the committees. My name is Diane Larson, and I am the Executive Director of the Itasca County and Grand Rapids HRAs. And I'm also the current Legislative Chair for Minnesota NARO. The primary purpose of our testimony today is going to be to provide information to the committees regarding the importance of preserving publicly owned housing with an important state tool, and that is GO bonds. We have four speakers today, myself, Ms. Jennifer Keough, Mr. Tamur Mahmood, and Ms. Buffy Berenick. I am going to begin with a brief overview of the Minnesota Chapter of Housing and Redevelopment Officials, or Minnesota NARO, and how our members provide affordable housing throughout the state. Our other presenters will illustrate the importance of preserving publicly owned housing, what has been done throughout the state, and then what need still exists and what our ask is of you today. Minnesota NARO is a statewide membership organization. We have over 400 members from the housing and community development field. Our membership is represented by nearly 90% of the housing and redevelopment authorities, or HRAs, across the state who provide housing resources in every legislative district. Many HRAs own and manage public housing. And you can see, as this map illustrates, public housing is located in all 87 counties. HRAs are organized under the authority established specifically in Minnesota Statute 469. This section of the statute provides the frameworks for HRAs, economic development authorities, and port authorities, but of course our focus today is the work undertaken by HRAs. The purpose statement of the HRA statute spells out what we are to do, and it's very clear. We are to, one, provide a sufficient supply of adequate, safe, and sanitary dwellings for Minnesotans. We are to clear and redevelop blighted areas. And we are charged with remedying the shortage of housing for low and moderate income residents in our state. HRAs manage a portfolio of housing in our own communities. Most of us administer rent assistance programs in partnership with local landlords. Most HRAs own and manage multifamily buildings serving low-income persons and families, and as Commissioner Ho stated, many of whom are seniors or persons with disabilities. We develop housing and we administer rehabilitation programs to preserve the housing that we have on the ground, which is critically important. The state also plays a critical role in helping housing authorities address local housing needs through many programs. And in response to Commissioner Ho's testimony, I want to add that HRAs often partner on those HIV projects, and we definitely support those bond resources. But our testimony today will focus this presentation on just how important GO bonds are to us. As I mentioned, HRAs, we administer many different programs. Some are federally funded, some are state funded, or even locally funded. But if we're looking today at just the public housing portfolio across the state, HRAs are serving more than 36,500 residents in our public housing. A majority of those residents have annual income under $15,000 per year, and 64% are headed by those with disability or seniors. And Commissioner Ho mentioned earlier, one-third of all of our residents are children. These public housing projects in Minnesota have an estimated insured value of nearly $2 billion. But what we are facing is that 95% of these units are over 35 years old. Federal investment in public housing has declined for many, many years, and there's a growing backlog of capital needs. Housing authorities across the state are really doing a great job of managing these properties, but lack the necessary resources. Postponing capital investments on these properties negatively affects financial viability, but it also affects our resident well-being. GO bond proceeds on the state level have been successfully used for health, safety, and energy improvements to these properties. This funding is awarded by Minnesota Housing in a statewide competitive award process for the publicly owned housing program, or as we fondly call it, POP, P-O-H-P. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Jennifer Keough, and she's going to illustrate and show you the impact that this POP program has had across our state.
Ms. Keough, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Keough, and I serve as the Deputy Executive Director for the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. I'm going to focus my time with you today to discuss how bonding at the state level has positively impacted the people that we serve through our public housing programs across the state. It is so important to preserve the assets that we have on the ground. As our public housing stock in the state continues to age, the housing needs continue to grow. Housing authorities rely on congressional appropriations for their capital funds, which continue to fall significantly short. In fact, nationally, the backlog of capital needs is $70 billion. And here in Minnesota, the current need is $355 million. And just alone at the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority, our capital needs are estimated at $150 million. It becomes more and more important to make sure that we are preserving the affordable housing resources that we already have. General obligation bonds for public housing rehabilitation provide the funding for large capital needs, such as replacing roofs, elevators, windows, and HVAC equipment. These improvements ensure that current energy, building, and fire codes are met to keep operating costs at a minimum, and more importantly, to keep our residents safe. Minnesota NARO and our membership sincerely appreciate the past bipartisan support. With these dollars from the state, HRAs are better able to make effective and efficient use of limited government dollars to preserve and provide decent housing for our community members. I'm going to share with you some photos of work that has been completed throughout Minnesota from the dollars that have been invested into public housing from the state. This Itasca County HRA building faced poor air quality and no way to adequately circulate and exchange air in the building. In the winter, large amounts of condensation appeared on windows and sills. The water heater was original to the building, was not energy efficient, and if it required repair, residents could be without water until parts could be obtained. In 2017, POT dollars allowed the HRA to install an air handling system to circulate fresh air into the building, correcting the moisture and condensation issues. Two energy efficient water heaters were also installed so that if one water heater was down, residents would still have hot water. Especially important are the improvements that our residents cannot see, which keeps them safe and secure, which you see here at the Wilmer HRA. In this example, several unrated plumbing chases were discovered, which means the enclosures for the piping had to meet current fire code and also had to be properly separated at each floor to meet code. You can also see some before and after of some updated shower stalls, which were expanded to provide seating, as well as handheld shower heads, which are so essential for the residents living in their building. Back to the northern part of Minnesota in Virginia. The HRA used their dollars for fire safety and security upgrades that included fire alarm system that connected their two buildings, a replacement of fire doors, and new security cameras that helped with safety and security of their buildings. And in Red Wing, they used their POP awards on new windows that would meet ADA requirements. This was a $1.2 million project, and the HRA received close to $1 million in funding through general obligation bonds. And in 2017, funding was used to replace the two boilers and air handlers in their Jordan Towers. These systems were original to the building when it was built in 1974. The middle picture shows the crane lifting the new system to the roof. The total cost for the project was $729,000, and roughly $540,000 came from POP. And then into the suburban metro area, the Dakota County CDA used POP funds to update an aged and weathered development in Apple Valley. These 16 units received new hardy siding, garage doors, windows, exterior lighting that are more energy efficient and provide longer lasting construction items. And then to the urban core, where the St. Paul PHA used their POP dollars for a modernization project for this townhome community of 88 units built in 1965. POP funding helped cover construction costs and shorten the project timeline, saving years of inflation and additional general costs. New construction would have cost far more than modernizing the existing units. This project supported almost 135 jobs, and many of which were minority and women-owned businesses. And here you see some of the wonderful photos of the interior and exterior modernization work that was done at St. Paul. And our last stop on the tour is at the Minneapolis Public Housing Authority. We received $1.2 million to partially fund a $4.6 million project at our 620 Cedar Avenue, a 10-story high-rise built in 1963. Some of the improvements included extensive plumbing replacement, installation of a fire sprinkler system and a fire alarm system, significant accessibility improvements, including accessible kitchens and showers, bathroom upgrades, refurbished kitchen cabinets, to name a few. Joining me today is one of our residents who sits on our MPHA board, Tamir Mahmoud. Tamir is going to talk about the impacts the use of our POP dollars have had in our community. So we're trying to socially distance, so give me just a second to bring him over to the screen.
Sir, please state your name for the record, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Jennifer. Could you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please proceed.
Thank you, sir. My name is Tamir Mahmoud. I was born in 1946 in Mogadishu, the capital city of Somalia. I moved to Minneapolis in 2002 and found my new home in public housing, high-rise located at 1515 Park Avenue South. I'm active in my building, in my neighborhood, and in larger community. I am a tenant advocate and serve as a president of my resident council and vice president of the Minneapolis High-Rise Representative Council. I am also resident commissioner on the MBHA Board of Directors. MBHA has a fortunate to receive funding through the POHB program. Also, my building has not been a recipient of these POHB dollars. I am aware of the improvement made on other buildings, including the sprinkler system, plumbing upgrades, and modernization of elevators. All of these improvements are of great benefit to the elderly and disabled residents living in high-rise. Through these dollars, MBHA has been able to renovate the Cedar Campus in Cedar Riverside neighborhood. These improvements have included new plumbing, apartment modernization, elevator updates, and sprinkler systems. As you have seen in photos, on behalf of MBHA residents, I wanted to say thank you. We appreciate these dollars and the great impact they have had on improving the health and safety of MBHA residents. Thank you, Tamir Ali Mahmoud.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamud. Next up, we have Buffy Baranek, the Executive Director of the Southeast Minnesota Multi-County HRA. Please state your name for the record and please proceed.
Actually, Chair Lee, I have one slide left, if that's okay.
Why don't you wrap up and then you could proceed to Ms. Baranek.
Sounds good. So the last slide that I have is in regards to preservation tools that are provided for housing authorities. With the continued disinvestment in public housing, PHAs are making choices about different tools that are now available to make necessary capital improvements. Since the creation of the POP program, HUD has made a variety of these tools accessible for housing authorities. Because of the way the language in the bonding bill sits today, PHAs are prohibited from the use of these federal tools if they have received prior state funding. For example, in Minneapolis, we use general obligation bonds for improvements made to our scattered site homes. When we had decided to further advance the improvements necessary for our portfolio, we had to exclude 2 out of over 700 homes for conversion because of this language provision. There is a need for language change, which would clarify that publicly owned housing included public ownership structures required by HUD financing tools. This change would allow for PHAs to use all of the tools available to meet their capital needs. So now I will turn over the presentation to Buffy, who will close us up. Thank you, Chair Lee.
Thank you. Ms. Baranek, please state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony. Ms. Baranek, we can't hear you if you're speaking right now.
Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Buffy Baranek. I serve as the Executive Director for the Southeastern Minnesota Multi-County Housing and Redevelopment Authority and also co-chair the Minnesota NARO Legislative Committee with Diane Larson. I'm going to share with you the historical investment the state of Minnesota has made in our infrastructure and illustrate the amount of unmet need that Representative Houseman alluded to in her opening comments that exist for publicly owned housing across the state. And then I'll finish up with our 2 requests. Previous GO bonds have made a huge impact on Minnesota's public housing stock, as Jennifer shared. And I'm happy to say, being of rural Minnesota, that approximately 60% of that funding has gone to rural Minnesota. GO bonds are the state's largest resource for capital to preserve that federally assisted housing. And as Jennifer and Commissioner Ho stated earlier, since 2012, $45.5 million have been spent impacting our public housing stock. Most importantly, this investment has kept Minnesotans in decent, safe, sanitary housing while maintaining the livability and the quality of that housing. From a fiscal standpoint, this investment preserves a precious resource that can be reused again to help another family achieve financial self-sufficiency or preserve or prevent them from being homeless. We all know it costs less to preserve than to build new. As Representative Gomez pointed out earlier, this is just one tool in the housing continuum spectrum that is necessary to address the big picture housing crisis and not compound the problem. Although the investment has made a tremendous impact, it only represents about one third of the public housing units across our state, and I challenge us to do more. In 2019, Minnesota NARO commissioned a report to quantify that unmet need in our public housing stock. The immediate need is nearly $355 million. So although we have done a lot to preserve the critical assets there and we've made wise investments, as Jennifer showed us with those dollars, there's more to be done. Not reflected in these numbers are the cost to upgrade and retrofit sprinkler systems. So if as a state we want to go down that path of keeping public housing safe, we need to also fund that. Steady and consistent attention is a solid and fiscally responsible way to continue to preserve this publicly owned asset. So I'm going to wrap up with our two requests. First, we need deliberate action to clarify language to protect the POP funding opportunity for HRAs and allow them to access HUD's creative financing models. Because of the way the state's language is currently written, HRAs are prohibited from the federal tools if they have received POP funding. This is a zero cost change to the budget. Second, our request. We know our need is $355 million. That's just our current need right now. And knowing that the budget constraints that face us and taking that into account, our request is for $100 million, or 28% of that current need, to maintain and effectively preserve our publicly owned assets. To literally capitalize on Commissioner Ho's quote, we ask that you go big so all can go home. Housing is part of Minnesota's infrastructure. It's just like roads and bridges. It's our collective experience as housing authorities that the residential housing stock not only constitutes the majority of a community's tax base, but it also is the availability of affordable housing that's critically linked to the prosperous local economic development. Providing quality, affordable housing to families and seniors smartens the use of our public resources. As you're all aware, studies show time and time again that when individuals move into affordable housing, healthcare outcomes improve, emergency room visits go down, and people can focus on education and job training. When families and seniors are no longer spending more than 50% of their income on housing, they're better able to meet those other critical needs. Bonding is the state's largest and most consistent investment in affordable housing. It is the only tool to create and preserve homes for some of Minnesota's lowest income and most underserved households. Bonding's absolutely critical to leveraging federal tools and preserving existing investments to provide housing to our very low and extremely low income households. On behalf of our membership, we are grateful for your support and the opportunity to speak with you today. Again, thank you for your time to learn about our critical housing needs that we have across the state of Minnesota. Chair Lee, we are happy to answer any questions you or the committee may have.
Thank you, Ms. Baranek, and all the testifiers for coming in today. And I will say that, I really understand the value of public housing here in the state of Minnesota. Myself and my family, when we first came to the United States from a refugee camp in Thailand, we were living in Minneapolis public housing. And so I know the value of, having housing for all of our community members throughout the state. And so I just want to say thank you for that. I do have a question or a few questions for Commissioner Ho, and then we'll move on to Representative Abaje and start members' question. Commissioner Ho, can you talk a little bit. I know that there was a slide you said that you use HIVs for financing manufacturer home community infrastructure. Can you tell us why we can't use GO bonds for that? And then in one of your slides, you said that there was about 220 and unmet needs for HIBs, the request. Can you give us an idea of if we were to fund the governor's recommendation, will the remaining 120 still come back and ask, or you know, what can we do to address that? And then also, if the governor have any recommendations for public housing in his bonding proposal, GO bonding proposal coming forward. Thank you.
Chair Lee and members of the committees, question number one, why can't we use GO bonds for manufactured home communities? It's because they're privately owned and GO bonds need to be used in publicly owned places. Question number three, the governor does not have the public housing preservation bonds in his bonding proposal. He has a modest bonding proposal this year that includes a substantial amount of housing infrastructure bonds, but not public housing bonds. Question number two, we are beginning the process of the 2021 consolidated RFP, starting with what would usually be a lively in-person meeting of developers from across the state in the office, where we talk through changes to agency priorities, the scoring process, and then we do technical assistance breakouts. It was one of my favorite days at Minnesota Housing when we could see all our partners in the building. It's all virtual this year, of course. I will have a competition that culminates in December announcements. Oftentimes, projects that were not awarded funding in a previous cycle come back in. Sometimes you have to come back in a couple times. Affordable housing development is not for the impatient. You have to have a long horizon on that. But we would also expect to have some new proposals that we haven't seen before come in. So as I said, it tends to be the case that the agency only has resources to say yes to about 1 in 4 proposals that come through. When we have a big housing infrastructure bond year, we're able to say yes to 1 in 3. I think I hit all your questions, Chairlee.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Bajaj.
Thank you, Chairlee, and thank you to all the other chairs from the other committees. As someone who sits on both the Capital Investment Committee and the Housing Committee, it's really important to see how all of this intersects with each other. One of the things that I've been hearing from multiple testimony from the people here today and also in the Housing Committee is that we have all these choices that we can make. And I think it's time for us as a state to make better choices to support people to ensure that they have their housing. I think Commissioner Ho has said this before, but this is the one type of assistance that even if you qualify for it, you may not get it. So it's still sort of some type of lottery system when we all know that housing is a major foundational base for families to be able to get ahead, for their kids to do well in school, for them to do well in their jobs. So if we truly care and really want housing and we really want people to succeed, then I believe that we must dedicate more of our funding and our resources to make sure that we're keeping people in their homes. So one thing I actually want to dig in on a little bit, if the people from NARO could talk a little bit more about this, but the public housing investment, I think that's definitely a place where it often becomes like a first stop for people as they're getting more stabilized in their housing. So if you could kind of speak more to the impact that that's had on families and where you've seen them go after their time in public housing and what GO bonds could do to help continue to support the efforts that you guys are doing there.
So who from NARO will be able to take that question? Ms. Larson, would you like to take that question?
Sure, I'll take a stab at it. I think the question is what impact do we see and where do we see folks moving on to? And I think you're absolutely right, Representative, that oftentimes we are the first door that folks are coming into. And we're being able to house folks in safe, sanitary, decent housing. And I think I can only speak from my agency, but we see people better equipped to be out looking for work. we see people who have children who have a safe place that they know they're coming back to that place each and every night. It's pretty hard to do homework if you don't know where you're going to be that night. And we have seen folks reunite with children. I think that's one of the greatest things we've seen. People who may have had their children placed in foster care, being able to reunite with children. We see folks being gainfully employed, and we've seen folks move on. I've even seen folks move on to home ownership up here. So I think, you know, we're part of that continuum of housing. And I think it's really, really critically important. We've got these resources in our state, and we need to maintain those resources that we've got on the ground, because we know how expensive it is to build new. And so if we can maintain these resources that we have, I think that's just critically important to the families that we serve. And I hope that answers your question.
Why don't we move over to the next, next member, Representative Hewitt, Howard, Lucero, Erdahl, Lilly, and then Houseman. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and Chair Gomez and Chair Houseman. Thanks for being with us today. I love saying Chair Gomez, by the way. Anyways, real quick, being new to the bonding committee, I don't understand how we award our contracts as far as RFPs go. I'm concerned that we're making sure that we do give a percentage of them to vet groups, minority groups, women groups, and you can answer that question. And also the other question I have is, these are cumbersome RFPs in many cases when we do put it out for contractors. And do we have a method to help these groups actually be on a equal playing field when they bid on these contracts, like the bigger ones that can hire lawyers and others to do this?
Commissioner Ho.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Representative, for the question. The agency is constantly looking at ways to improve the process for applying for funds. And during my tenure, we have definitely turned up the number of points that you get for being a BIPOC-owned or woman-owned business. And thinking about how, you know, you can't have a scoring system that rewards people for having gotten awards in the past. Right? You have to have a pathway for people who haven't been able to use agency resources in the past, have a doorway in. And housing infrastructure bonds have been an incredible tool to allow us to do that, because the major source of financing that we have is the federal low-income housing tax credit. And the federal low-income housing tax credit is a very technical and complicated, costly tool for being able to access capital resources for housing. So the housing infrastructure bonds allows us to bring newcomers into our development community. So for example, in 2019, when we selected Sabathany to do senior housing, Sabathany had never done a housing development project with us before. By being able to fund their project exclusively with housing infrastructure bonds and not kind of make them go through the federal low-income housing tax credit doorway on their first project, we're creating a pathway to entry into our development community that lets people kind of have a fighting chance of getting their first project done without incurring all of the technical support that's needed in order to access the low-income housing tax credit. I hope that answers your question, sir.
Representative Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a comment and a quick question. First, I really want to thank Chair Lee for bringing this group together across multiple committees. I can't overstate how important that is, because as we've heard in this committee today and in Housing Committee and in Preventing Homelessness, the needs across our housing continuum are immense. Just the reality that 500,000 Minnesotans are struggling to afford their homes. 10,000 kids experience homelessness. Our unsheltered needs, they're so immense, but we have a tendency at the legislature to get siloed in some of our work. And that really puts us in a trap sometimes where we get in these either or traps. And I think that's clear when it comes to housing infrastructure bonds, because this is one of the main tools that we've utilized to fund housing. But it's no surprise we have new uses being proposed because on the other side, our overall housing budget is less than 1% of our overall budget. And so what I want to encourage this group to do is hopefully come together again this session, because let's be honest, we need to expand the use of housing infrastructure bonds, the dollars and uses from my perspective, or we can dramatically expand our budget, our housing budget. We shouldn't get trapped in the either or. We need to think differently about how we fund housing. And so my question is about one of those potential gaps or potential new uses. And maybe someone from NARO could answer this question. We heard about how efficient use of HIB dollars it is to preserve our public housing, but I'm also curious about our naturally occurring affordable housing. Right now, at the state level, we do not provide any resources whatsoever, really, to significantly help maintain the naturally occurring affordable housing that we have. In my community in Richfield, we lost one unit, and just like that, 725 units, 2,000 people were displaced. And we really at the state level need to concern ourselves with preserving and improving the quality of our naturally occurring affordable housing. And I'm just curious if someone with NARO or anyone else could sort of speak to the issue of naturally occurring affordable housing and whether housing infrastructure bonds is a place we could potentially look to help in those efforts.
Mr. Adams, is this something that you can answer?
Nothing specifically. Can you rephrase the question?
Or Ms. Baranek, then?
Buffy Baranek with Southeastern Minnesota Multi-County HRA. Chair Lee and Representative Howard, we experience naturally occurring affordable housing out here in the Southeast. We have actually acquired one of those properties. We were recently contacted by four Plex, and we had to look at the financial viability of this. And this is really one of the challenges, is getting the rehab dollars necessary when there is no longer rental assistance tied to those properties. We have partnered with Greater Minnesota Housing Fund on some of these issues. It's really having access to rental assistance or the rehab dollars, because they are dilapidated and many are very, very outdated. And for an HRA to come in and actually take that over and raise rents. So just to put this in perspective, this fourplex, the rents were $250, laundry was free, and they were paying their maintenance man $50 a month. I can't run that business. Just the mileage to send the maintenance guy out there to fix the leaky toilet is going to cost me more than $50. So, and now to raise the rents on that, to get that to be affordable, is going to displace those four families. So this is a real challenge that is especially out here in rural Minnesota, because it's much easier to do a tax credit project on a 40 units. We struggle with the four, the 12, and the real small units out there to provide. So I think that this is a definite challenge for the state to help preserve this, and for members of the affordable housing community to address this in a very creative way.
Thank you, Ms. Baranek. Next up, we have Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have two questions. And the first is, as a real estate agent myself, as a landlord, as a licensed general contractor, I am very, very concerned, and I share the concerns of those with affordable housing. I absolutely want to work and partner with anybody and all to enact policies on the state level that would bring this the costs and bring housing to affordable levels for more people across Minnesota. And actually, Representative Howard's question on naturally occurring affordable housing is a great transition. So as I've been listening to the presentation today, I don't know if this is coming across here. There are two, I think of it as an equation. And on one side of the equation, there is building costs. And on the other side of the equation, there are housing expenses. And all we've heard today in the presentations are one side of the equation. and that is housing expenses. I am very much interested in, and I'm wondering, and I'll throw this question out to any of the testifiers, and this is the first of my two questions, is has there been an analysis on the other side of the equation, which is the building costs? If you take the construction of single-family homes, of apartment complexes, and break down, what are the costs that go into it? Because obviously the cost to construction goes across the other side of the equation of having to pay for the housing. And then a breakdown of those costs, how they compare to our surrounding states.
So, Lucero, you want to add your second question too?
Okay, well, second question is, a couple weeks ago in this committee, several weeks ago, we heard that it was suggested zoning and HOAs that prohibit chickens are evidence of racism against some minority groups. In the examples of public housing discussed today, does anybody know if chickens are permitted or prohibited in publicly owned housing? And if they're prohibited, is that an example of public housing being discriminatory and racist against minority groups?
Thank you, Representative Lucero. And so somebody from public housing, are you able to address the cost and then the zoning piece that Representative Lucero have? Anybody from NARO? Or Mr. Adams, I see your hand raised. Mr. Adams, you're muted right now.
Can you hear me now? Yeah, I'm sorry for that. I think we've had done a lot of analysis on the building cost side of things over the years, maybe not specifically to the public housing element, but more for in just greater Minnesota. Right now, we're seeing a 13 to 25% increase primarily on the labor or on the lumber side of things. But historically, we've just seen things evolve and increase by about 75 to 100% since 2010 in construction costs alone. Fortunately, we've had a lot of communities who have been stepping up and willing to partner more and more with us, sacrificing development fees, sacrificing taxes or tax abatement and such. So that hasn't been a major hindrance for us specifically as a developer in terms of some of the fees. It's more of the labor and the actual material costs that have escalated so much over the last decade.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. And then anybody from NARO to the second question for Representative Lucero? If we don't, Ms. Larson, real quick, please, we can move on.
Chair Lee, I'll just attempt to address that. In federally owned public housing, we do allow pets. It's a requirement. It's a federal regulation. But each housing authority across the state will have a pet policy that addresses the keeping of those pets. And that policy usually will be associated with what type of property that might be. So I think when you talk across the state, that could be different. I think that if you were looking at a single family home that might be a scattered site, that will be a very different policy than if you have a 50 or 100 or 300 unit high rise, that where the keeping of chickens would be very, very, very difficult if you had 200 residents who each wanted to have 5 chickens and you don't have the property to do that. So I would say that pets are absolutely not prohibited, but I think you will find on a case-by-case basis throughout the state what kind of pet that might be or what kind of animal that might be. And I think you'll find that that's different throughout the state depending on the type of
property. Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Erdahl and then Representative Hausman to close. Representative Lilly, I apologize. We only have 2 minutes left, and so I want the two lead and chair to close off. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And I just want to add to the conversation how important affordable housing is in terms of health and safety, education, jobs. It really is a vital part of our economy and life in Minnesota. Commissioner Hull, just a quick question of you. I believe you're requesting $100 million in 2021. Are you making a like request in 2022?
Commissioner Hull.
Chair Lee and Representative Erdahl, first of all, thank you for getting the bonding bill done last year. And it's the governor's prerogative in terms of shaping the 2022 bonding proposal. I will tell you I'm fairly shameless in terms of my letting MMB and the governor's office know how important it is to have year-to-year housing infrastructure bond investments so that the development community knows what's coming. but it's the governor's prerogative to decide what's in his bonding bill next year.
Thank you, Commissioner Hurwitz. And Representative Hausman, Chair Hausman, to close it off.
I got one more quick one I'd like to follow up with, and that is of Mr. Lee. We are given limits on how much a state can afford to bond. Is that all GO bonds, or is the appropriation bonds included? And if it is not, is there a limit on appropriation bonds?
Mr. Lee, real quickly, and then Representative Hausman to close.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, the limit applies to all state-backed debt, so it's both GO bonds and appropriation bonds.
Okay, thank you.
Hausman, close it off, please.
Mr. Chair, I will pass because you're out of time. I can follow up in another way.
Okay. Well, thank you, Chair Hausman, Chair Gomez, and members of the two housing committees for joining us today and all other testifiers. I encourage our members to follow up with these individuals if you have further questions. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.